If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to Table Flipping. I'm actress Taylor Mishak.
And I'm writer Alyssa Littman. Join us as we sit down with guests to unpack how the fascinating, messy women of reality TV have shaped our lives.
And of course, dish about Bravo, The Bachelor, and everything in between.
Thanks for listening.
Happy Friday, Alyssa.
Happy Friday. Okay, really quickly, you guys, I have to tear Spectrum a new one because we're moving and they were supposed to transfer our service and they didn't do it. And I was on the phone with them for so long this morning and they couldn't resolve it. So now Mike has my phone and I have no notes for the pod. So I'm just flying blind, going from some foggy memories that I was maybe stoned, maybe drinking wine while I watched reality TV this week.
I know. You guys didn't know how academic we were about this, bitch. We've got notes in front of us. So many of mine, though, are like absolutely nonsensical, like especially if I write them at the beginning of the week.
That's
I'll be like,
true.
If I write down these three nouns, I'll absolutely know what thought I had on Friday morning. And then I'm reading my notes like, what drunk ass bitch wrote this note on this phone? Like, what? How am I supposed to decipher what I even said to myself? But don't worry. We have so much to talk about. And yeah, fuck Spectrum, dude. That's crazy. Like, the other day I had like a super important Zoom and then the internet went out and I was like, plugging things, unplugging things, like running around. And then I finally call them and they're like, oh yes, there was a scheduled outage for your area. And
you're
I was like, what do you mean a scheduled outage? And for whom? Mid-work day. Like, I don't understand. And why wouldn't you, can you give us a heads up? It feels like if you knew, you should tell people. It's just bonkers.
Yeah, this podcast not sponsored by Spectrum, let me tell you.
Not sponsored by, unless Spectrum, if you actually want to pay us, that would be
fine. Will take your money. You owe us money at this point.
Yeah, we'll just be taking our money back. Oh, man. Okay, we haven't talked a lot about The Bachelorette because it's just like not tickling our fancy, let's say. At least not yet, right? But
yeah.
What I will say is there is like some, around the show drama that strikes a chord with me, hits a nerve. I've complained a lot on the pod before about people calling actors liars. Like, well, if you're an actor, you must be a good liar. Like, fuck off, Steve at the bar. Like, that's not true all of the time. And there is this front runner for Katie, Greg, who's so darling. And they went on like the one-on-one fishing date last week. He's like, this week, I think she was like, I'm pretty much falling for you. Like he's like in the lead. And then I saw something on Instagram that was like, huge news. Greg went to acting school in New York. Therefore, he is a dirty, rotten liar who is not here for the right reasons. He's here for his acting career, which what person launched their acting career from the Bachelorette franchise, people? Like, what do you mean? Like, it's so stupid. And also, he has obviously went to acting school. Look at him. He was like a cute little musical theater boy.
Oh my
Does
God.
He not?
He's so the guy that you're like, oh, you're straight? Okay. And then you're like, oh, you're my best friend? Oh, I'm in love with you? Oh, you did the same thing to three other girls in the program? Okay, cute. No, we did all have sex with you, and now our feelings are really hurt.
That's exactly it. If you want to have beef with him for going to acting school, Alyssa hit the nail on the head, and there's nothing more to it. It's just so silly to me, especially in this season where there's the only drama is about men being here for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And then to be like, and Greg is too because he's interested in acting. Like, grow up, people.
Also, just like, I think this is the larger problem with the Bachelor franchise for me. It's like, guys, why are we pretending everyone isn't here to be Instagram famous?
Yeah.
Like, this is bullshit. Of course you shouldn't be going around saying, I want to be the next Bachelor. But to act like you're not all here to quit your jobs and sell us some fucking SpawnCon is just a joke.
Yeah. So those are, I mean, that's my only thoughts on The Bachelorette this week.
Yeah.
We've discussed that it is our, like, folding laundry, packing things show right now. But I'm still on it. I'm still loyal. I'm watching. And we hope to go on. We're going to do Trust the Bachelor process in a few weeks, yes. Which is going to be fun. Yeah. Our nice little sister pod. Moving on. Could we talk about Roni this week?
Yeah. Okay. So here's – okay. So we have said, like, okay, please, we are not the experts on race and we – I don't know how to navigate this, right? But I've seen a lot of people talk about how – you know, this is what Housewives is. They take real issues with dumb rich women and it's funny and it's sad and it's interesting, right? And so I'm going to try to be better about not, like, shying away from saying the wrong thing in the context of Housewives, because I think this should be, like, part of that canon, part of that campy, serious, heartbreaking, funny, wrong situation. And I think this conversation between Ebony and Ramona was like a perfect example of that, because Ebony is an incredible housewife for pushing so hard and not giving up one-on-one with Ramona when she has nowhere to go. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. No, put everything you just said on a shirt. I love it. I couldn't agree more. And yeah, that scene felt so perfect in every way. And the... like, it, Ramona, you've got to admit that for the Daughters of America, Kamala Harris being a vice president would be phenomenal. And to be repeating it, like, over and over and over again and instigating, like, a fucking fight with her over it, I loved it. I was here for it. I think it's amazing. And, yeah, it felt like a classic Great Housewives moment. Like, it could all be everything, which is fierce.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, what a dingus Ramona, like... I don't want to talk about politics. I don't want to talk about politics. Shut up. It's so like,
yes, you
weird.
Do. You're partying with Eric Trump in the Hamptons. Yes. Like, what are you talking about? You love politics. You just don't want to be called racist on national TV. Also, like, I will say, kind of to what you were just speaking to just to play devil's advocate for Ramona. You guys all know where my politics lie. It's not a secret. But if it was the other way around and it was like, oh my God, isn't it so great that Sarah Palin is going to be the first female vice president? I'd be like, no. And so, you know, that was a little bit of like a sort of, you know, pouring gas on a fire by Ebony, which I appreciate.
I'm loving it. That's what I'm completely here for it. I think it's fun too, the like, the pros and cons of Harlem Night, I think, was so funny to watch. I love a hungry housewife. I love a hungry housewife. It's a housewife sitting there being like, when is the food coming? It's always funny to me. So also, I think it's great.
Thank you so much, Bravo, for knowing that we want to see all of them try to walk down those stairs before the party. Like, that is what makes Bravo brilliant, is those little details. Like, the watching them order food at restaurants and watching them being like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, when they're wearing heels. Ugh, I just love it. I love the editors.
Sonia being like, I'll have to just sleep over. Not that I haven't done that before. It's like, oh, what a gift. She's always on. They must put her microphone on. She must sleep in her microphone. Like, that's a woman you've got to have mic'd immediately. Everything she says is gold.
Yeah, I also loved Ebony being like, the best part is you were going to leave your own house. And I was like, I don't know how to lock up. I thought that was so funny. I thought, I feel like I personally have been like, I don't want to make light of a very serious topic. But I feel like I'm getting in a groove with Bravo, like, bringing this to the table. How do you feel about it?
I feel the same way. I think it was, I really loved the sit down lunch with Ebony and Leah where Ebony talks about feeling that pressure and how she's working with having this role of like wanting to enlighten her fellow cast members, but also doing it in a way that makes her feel good about herself and her identity and her work. And like, I think to talk about it dead on was like really great, because like you said, it made it feel more, it's just like a more honest version of the show to address something like that head on, which I loved, because we're sitting here talking about it for the past few weeks of like, oh my God, it just has got to be, feels like so much tokenizing of Ebony, and there's just like so much responsibility, and that doesn't feel very fair. And to just like give her the floor to talk about it is the right thing to do. And it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And answers a lot of questions. And I'm like, oh, great. And it makes it us, I feel like I learned a lot more about her in the episode too, instead of like a role that she's being forced to play. It feels more authentic to herself. Mm-hmm. So I love it.
Yeah,
I think
for
it's,
sure.
I think it's great. And yeah, I loved the really uncomfortable Ramona Ebony date afterwards. It's just too good. I think it's great. let's talk about the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. What do you think about this episode? Did you love it?
Yes. Kathy ordering a regular Coke. I am here for a regular Coke. She doesn't want diet. She doesn't want Coke Zero. She's like, I'll just treat myself to 52 grams of sugar. Thank you so much. Woo! I love it. the Scott Disick conversation is amazing.
My God. Can I say that there is nothing more Lisa Rinna than Lisa Rinna in a lip jumpsuit and a lip COVID mask saying, my daughter has a new headline. Like, it's so Lisa Rinna, I cannot get over it. To repeat herself 14 times going, I don't want to make a thing of it. I don't want to make a thing of it. I don't want to draw attention to this. And then at every moment, I think she said Scott 15 times in this episode. Like, the party with them at the end, and Dorit just like comes out of the bathroom and she goes, we're talking about Scott Disick, Dorit. It's like, yeah, no, we know. We fucking know. And then Dorit says, mazel. And Kathy says, Merry Christmas. Kathy has no idea what mazel tov means.
Well, Kathy's never spoken to a Jewish person because she's too like Anglo and rich, I guess. I don't know.
That's insane. It's so insane. That's just crazy. You live in LA.
Look, to be fair to Kathy, they still don't let Jews at her country club. So, you know.
Oh my God.
Sorry. I love her so much. The idea that she was like, yes, mazel tov is like, congratulations, good for you, Merry Christmas. I'm like,
yeah, it's
perfect.
Like, Merry Christmas. That's what it is. It's just everything. No, everything is everything to you, Kathy. And speaking of Kathy, her reaction to this Scott Disick news is just like so perfect. I want to put it in a bottle and wear it. Like, it's so funny when she's like, coming from somebody with a daughter in the public eye, it could be worse. It's like, fuck yeah, dude. Also, what's your soundbite? They did the, like, what would I do if my 18-year-old daughter was dating Scott Disick? And there was the, like, I would go lock her in her room, take her phone, and spank her. And then there's the Kyle, like, I wouldn't allow it. Like, what do you mean? Okay, but Alyssa, you're the mom. Your daughter is 18. She's dating Scott Disick. What do you do?
Really quickly, they were comparing her actions to, like, a 28-year-old Erica marrying a 50-year-old Tom, right?
Yeah.
And like, I can tell you right now that there's a huge difference between me at 19 and me at 28, you know, like that's a completely different decision making mechanism, and I don't think anyone would be dating Scott Disick if they were 28. But I don't know, as a girl who is like very boy crazy and very rebellious and made a lot of bad choices in my partners, I do have to say I feel like the harder you push against it, the more it'll stick, you know? So,
yes.
And also then you're going to get him in her ear, and you as a mom want to be a trusted source, not like the enemy. So I get it. It's like, you gotta play it cool. It is disgusting. She is a child. So I don't know that I would be like so warm and fuzzy to Scott, but I would be with my daughter. I'd be like, yeah, talk to me about how you're feeling.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you gotta keep her close. I also think of at times when I was like boy crazy and rebellious as well, The shadiest stuff I was doing was like behind everybody's back, behind my parents' right. back. So to at least, while there's so many other concerns I'm sure that come with like being in headlines, the amount of information that you would have by nature of everybody being famous and everything sort of being out in the open is more helpful than you know, if she was just sneaking around. But it is gross. I keep forgetting that she's 18,
Isn't
19.
She 19? I think she's 19 now.
Is she in the show? Is she 19? Yeah. I mean, either way, it's crazy. There's things that, like, I agree with. Yeah, I feel like it's like a completely different person than I was like 10 years ago. But I'm also even truly this week, I was rethinking something like a high school boyfriend had said to me. Mm-hmm. And I like unpacked a lie that I, or like something that he had like tricked me. And I'm literally about to be 30. And I just realized that something he said was a lie. And I'm like, that's bananas.
That happens to me all the time. I don't know if this happens to you as well, but there was like certain movies or shows I was not allowed to watch in high school or whatever because I'm the firstborn and my parents were very strict, and boys would say stuff to me, like especially from Louis, right? They would say stuff to me that I thought they came up with, like they were making a joke. Years later, I'll see an episode of Louis or like fucking Anchorman or something, which I did see, and I'll be like, what the fuck? He didn't make that up. Like, it happens to me constantly, and my
crush
is so funny. Also, I'm a fucking comedy writer, so shame on all of you assholes.
Yeah,
I had a crush
fuck you guys. That's so funny. What a specific level of deceit. Perfect for you.
I'm like, oh god, shame on me for having such low standards as far as like what's funny.
I also, wait, this episode, before we move on, touches on my like original Broadway theory of Tom not going and seeing Erica in Chicago. And I know it's just like a selfish thing because I like I'm proud that I had this idea over a year ago, but like that does feel like writing on the wall to me in the sense of like there was not happiness in their marriage. Do I still think the divorce is completely tied into everything that's going on with them legally and financially? Of course. But I can't say, like, that's not, if you even like your wife, you see her on Broadway.
Yeah.
You just do that. It's crazy.
Or if you want people to think you like her. It doesn't matter if you like her. Yeah, that's crazy. Good for you.
Yeah, so that still hurt my feelings for her. It made me sad for her. But I was like, that's still legit. But I'm still going to hold your feet to the fire about everything else. Also, we should do a spa day like what Sutton and Erica did.
I know.
Serious. Is it healthy to do cryotherapy back to back with a sauna?
I don't know. I was thinking the same thing. I was like,
and was
you
the
know,
camera in there?
No, I think it was on the outside. I think the glass was just very clean. Also, it's very interesting to me. This is something that I struggle with too. So it's interesting to see it in Sutton, right? So I have had to work on in therapy that people should like you for who you are and not what you do for them, right? And that's a very hard thing to do, especially when you're, like, a helpful person. And Sutton clearly has, like, a fuck ton of money to spend on everybody. And it's interesting because Erica's receiving it. Like, her love language is clearly gifting or something.
Yeah.
And so she's like, Sutton, you're just you're such a warm-hearted person. Nothing you do is wrong because you rented out a whole spa for me during a pandemic. So I love watching these, like, unhealthy behaviors play out and, like, treat each other to, you know, each other's psychoses.
That's such a funny thing to notice. You're so right. Because, yeah, Sutton is, like, constantly bringing all of these gifts and, like, showering people in things. And I did think that the divorce kit was sweet with, like, the chips.
Yeah.
Just bringing out chips and being like, I just like these chips. That's
yeah,
funny. But, yeah, Erica has no problem being like, oh, thank you so much. Love all of this. Yeah, she's definitely – that's her love language. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Oh my god, the key.
Okay, I didn't get to watch it because my fucking cable was out this morning, so I watched
the
first
my
half.
Gosh,
you have to tell me.
Let me tell you, I love this opportunity to have the gift of telling you that. Okay, so Juliet approaches Max, Kelsey's ponytail boyfriend, mm-hmm. at the bar mm-hmm. after a whole fight already goes down between Camille and Jordana. And Camille pushes Jordana in the pool and all the girls are screaming at each other. And I'm thinking, this is good. This is a good cat fight, but it's not hardcore siesta key, right? Mm-hmm. It's not hardcore. You push a girl in a pool in her swimsuit. I've seen worse. I've mm-hmm. done worse. But then Juliet goes, no, this is my show. This is my show. And this is siesta fucking key. And she goes up to Max at the bar, starts flirting with him so obviously, like textbook flirting. Kelsey walks over and was like, Juliet, why are you fucking flirting with my boyfriend at this bar? And she's like, you're being so possessive and jealous, Kelsey, like, oh, if I'm not allowed to talk to him, why don't you take your pet away? How about that? Oh my God. And they launch into this fight where Juliet is immediately off the handle and Kelsey is like leaning against the bar with her elbow, very steady talking, very calm, but it's just like coming back at her. They start fighting. It somehow escalates illogically into Juliet calling Kelsey desperate, thirsty. She's like, you're so fucking thirsty. And she threatens. She goes, if you don't walk away in a few seconds, I'm going to throw this drink in your face. And Kelsey's like, do it. I dare you. And she's like, I'm serious. It's like five seconds, Kelsey. And she goes, I do it. I could use the drink or something fucking weird thing. Throws the drink on her face, takes another drink, throws a second drink on her face, Alyssa, throws two drinks on her face. Then, of course, everybody's coming over and they're like, what the fuck? What's going on? And they're like trying to pull them away. Kelsey's like, you want everything that I have. And Juliet's like, you're just a thirsty bitch. And then Juliet forms a full fist and punches her in the face. And Kelsey's face is bleeding.
Did Kelsey and get a punch in?
No, oh, see, not even one.
I don't respect Kelsey. That sucks.
What?
Two drinks to the face and a punch, and she told you she was going to do it, and you got nothing? Nothing. You didn't prepare anything.
It's so intentional, though, what she's doing to, like, let her implode. Yeah, I think she saw from a mile away that she was the perfect amount of drunk. I think she wants her to just be a fucking mess, because this is her whole angle right now. Is like, you're not a good person when you're dating Sam and blah, blah, blah. Oh, and when Juliet's being pulled away, she goes, I'm going to sell so many more swimsuits than you.
I love that. That's the perfect thing to say. That's the perfect thing to say.
It was just so quintessential. I was like, this is it. This is the icing on the cake that is Siesta Key.
You know what I also respect about Siesta Key? So all these other fucking shows that we watch that are inferior, they will tee up that shit over and over again for weeks. And you're like, when are we going to, we got to get through this slog so I can see one person get punched. This show, I had no clue that was going to happen. They didn't tee mm-hmm. it up. They're like, we just know we got the goods. We just know mm-hmm. you're going to keep watching because anything can happen at any mm-hmm. time.
Excellent point. It's an excellent point. Yeah, you had texted and you were like, well, I just didn't catch the end of Siesta Key. And I was like, that's probably fine. And then the pool fight happens and I'm like, oh, shit. There's more coming. And then she punches her in the face. And then, of course, it still shows the next morning. She, like, wakes up with Sam and she's like, I can't believe that I did that.
She's so evil and crazy, and I feel like everyone must have had to, like, sign their rights away to be on this show, because how is there not multiple assault lawsuits?
Yeah, and, like, it's just, she made her bleed. She's punching her with a fist. Like, it's just crazy to see.
Wow.
Imagine that. Imagine going to a party and, like, there's just a constant high probability that you're going to get punched in the face. Like, that's what these people are, that's their life.
It's like, that's just like living in Florida, though. That's my impression of Florida. Mike always rags on me because I have, you know, I'm from LA and I have probably like a very posh opinion of myself and like a pretty low opinion of every other state. And that's who I am. And so I'm just going to spout them. If I have an opinion, if there's a stereotype, then you guys let me know if I'm wrong. Just blow me up in the DMs if the punching is not accurate to Florida.
Oh, man. I fucking, what a gift Siesta Key is. I can't get over it.
It's so good. Yeah.
Speaking of so good, we have such a good and juicy and fucking kick-ass interview this week that I'm super stoked on. So I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did.
So stoked, and I in particular am like extremely fangirling to have an incredibly special guest with us today. She has appeared on three seasons of Survivor. She's been on Redemption Island, Caramone, and my personal favorite, Game Changers. She's a beautiful badass on every season and is so inspiring. She now works as an incredibly charming host, and one of the many places that you can watch her is on People Magazine's digital series, People in 10, where she interviews like so many cool celebrities. Andrea Belke, welcome to Table Flipping.
Thank you for having me. You are so sweet, because the funny thing is, I'm a fan of yours. I've watched you in Dave. What? No, I'm just saying, it's funny. No, it's just funny to hear you say that you're a big fan, because I've watched you and I think you're so cool.
Oh my God, that's the coolest thing ever that's ever happened to me on this podcast. Especially because, I mean, I know a lot of our listeners know I like really, really got into Survivor this past year and a half. Like when Alyssa and I first started the pod, neither of us had really watched it. And it was actually one of our first episodes. We had a really talented writer come on and talk about it. And we were asking so many questions just from like a muggle's perspective, because we weren't super fans. And my like Survivor is just like what got me through quarantine. So like, not only am I fangirling over you, but it's like very fresh in my mind. It's all very new to me. So it's just like very exciting to kind of jump in on it now in the pod, coming from like a very different place as like a viewer. Because I just think you're so badass.
Thank you. It's crazy how many, I was just going to say, it's crazy how many new fans Survivor has picked up during the pandemic. Really? Oh, yeah. I mean, I get, you know, usually you do Survivor, the fans love you, and then they forget about you after the next season comes out. But because they didn't have a season of Survivor, I think, and because of the pandemic, everyone was binging so much TV, there's been just so many new fans. Even people that I worked with over the years that never really cared to even try to start Survivor, all of a sudden they're messaging me saying, oh my gosh, Andrea, I'm watching you on Survivor. And it was like, okay. You had, you know, 8 years to do that. But yeah, it's cool. So it's really nice when I hear people getting into it now.
That would be so surreal if you knew, like, to watch you as someone you know, like to go back and just see like your friend or your coworker doing all of the crazy, insane things that you do on this show. That's wild to me. If I met someone and they were like, oh, I was on Survivor, I would be like, oh, I'm going to go watch that immediately. I'm leaving this interaction to go watch you do. That's such a trip.
Yeah, it's cool, but also I just kind of cringe too, because like, I mean, my first season I did 10 years ago. That's, I don't know who that person is. So it's interesting when people say, especially when employers will say, oh, I'm watching. No. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, it wasn't me. But they usually have a good reaction. So it's fine.
Because you've been on three seasons, and like, what is the difference between, I have to imagine that what you're kind of like excited about and what you're scared of sort of has to change each time based on your experience, right? Like from the first time you're going versus the second and the third, like what is your mindset? What is the most like intimidating and what's the most like enticing when you're on your way there?
Well, the first time you play Survivor, it is, you're shell-shocked because you don't know what's going on. There's so many things to think about. You're on camera 24/7. You're so nervous. You don't know how to start a fire. You're thinking about all the survival aspects. And by the time you play three times, I mean, I don't think I even made a fire once. My third season. Like my first season, I was trying so hard to prove myself. I wanted to prove that I was a hard worker and I was a farm girl. And then by season three, I like barely could open a coconut. So because you realize that you realize people aren't going to vote you out for being a they're not going to keep you around for being a hard worker. They actually might vote you out for being a hard worker and being helpful and likable. So things kind of change. And also, you know, your first season, you don't really talk strategy right away. You're just getting to know everybody. It's very friendly. And then by season three, people are talking strategy within minutes of landing on the beach.
Yeah. I mean, especially in Game Changers, like that just has to be like so much more intimidating because you're like, oh, everybody here is like a big player, including you. Like, is that a crazy feeling?
Yes, definitely. I mean, so when I got to Game Changers and I was put on a tribe with Ceri, I was the one, I was fangirling majorly because I love her. I would do anything for Ceri. So I immediately wanted to be in an alliance with her, which was kind of a mistake because I was attached to her. So all the guys wanted to vote out Ceri first, and I was pretty much going down with the ship. So if we would have lost, then it would have been Ceri or me going home first. So luckily we didn't lose.
I was going to say, do you remember what you were most scared of when you first got there? Like, what was your biggest fear playing the first time?
Definitely being voted out first. I think everyone has that fear. Everyone just doesn't want to be the first person. And it's not, I mean, look, everyone has to, somebody has to be first. So it's not that big of a deal. I mean, you still get a fun experience. You get a paid for trip by CBS. But I think that's the fear of just like not doing the right thing in the first couple days or being an outcast and then actually getting voted off. So that was definitely my biggest fear. I've been really fortunate to get far in the game every time. Now, some of that is luck. It just depends. I mean, sometimes you're on a tribe with people you get along with. You know, all it takes is one person to not like you or not like your vibe, and then you could be voted out. So there's a lot of luck that goes with Survivor. So the people that are able to get along with many types of people usually do the best.
That makes sense. There's also, I sometimes my boyfriend and I will joke that it's like, for different seasons, depending on the cast, there is, you could truly get through so many weeks as long as there's a couple of annoying people in the cast. Like, people will, it seems to me, will throw out like strategy just to be like, oh my God, this one person just like won't shut up. Like, they're just annoying. So even any sort of other gameplay or strategy goes out the window because people just all look, there's like something so, there's so much commonality in being like, don't we all agree that this one person is annoying? So just by nature of you not being annoying, you've got to get through. Like, that's part of the luck, right?
Yes. However, the game's evolved so much. So now you want to bring the annoying person to the end. Even on my first season, Rob brought Philip to the end. And no one could stand Philip. I actually kind of love Philip. Like, I have a soft spot for him, and I loved watching other people react to his antics. So I actually like Philip, but a lot of people can stand him. But, you know, someone that's a good player would see that and say, okay, if I bring this annoying person to the end, then nobody's going to vote for them. So sometimes it actually pays to be annoying.
For a lot of these, like, how many of these relationships in your experience are, like, are still with you after these seasons? And do they change? Like, is it because, like, the pressures of being on the show and everything are lifted? Is there sort of a shift? Or is everything that was on the island still very much real? Does that make sense?
Nothing's real. I mean, there are a couple relationships that I still have, but it is really fascinating how you have relationships on the island that at the time and in that circumstance, you thought they were your best friend. So I thought this girl, Sarah, was my best friend. I thought we were long lost sisters. I thought I was going to go to Iowa and do tailgates with her at a baseball game. And then when I was voted out, I found out that everyone thought she was their best friend. So wow. She's brilliant. She's a really good player. But sometimes you realize, oh, that was all fake. And that person is really good at faking a friendship. But I do have a couple very close friends from each season. It's weird because it even goes the opposite. There were some people out there I couldn't stand on the island, but then outside of the game, they're lovely and amazing. And when you're not competing for $1 million, you realize you have a lot in common. So I've seen it go both ways.
Does that make you just feel like there's so many sociopaths in the world? Like, how do you separate from what happened in the game from your normal everyday interactions and your ability to trust people?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, there is a skill. I mean, it really, you know, the first time, I think everyone that plays Survivor kind of has to tap into that at some point, because you're voting people out and you're being so nice to their face and you mm-hmm. know they're going home. And it's such a cruel feeling. When you're doing it, you don't feel good about it at first. Then you kind of get addicted to the feeling. So, but you know, you realize, I mean, the first time you vote someone out on the game, you feel like a sociopath because you're being nice to them. They're coming up to you and they're saying, okay, so we're good. We're voting for so-and-so. And you're agreeing with them. You're smiling and laughing with them. And you feel so terrible because you realize you're voting this person out. Then you have to tell yourself, this is a game. And mm-hmm. hopefully they don't take it personal. I've been able to separate a bit. And after I get voted off, at first you feel bitter, but you're really just projecting your own disappointment on these other players. Mm-hmm. So whenever you see these people come back during the jury and they're, you know, they're the people coming back and asking questions and being so mean, it's because they're projecting their own disappointment. And I've been able to have a quick turnaround where I realize, okay, it's a game. I'm so fortunate to even have gotten this far. Also, I don't want to look really bad on TV, so I'm going to try to just laugh. I'm going to try to laugh about this so people don't think I'm bitter.
Yeah.
I feel like there's different casts in my experience of binging oh so many seasons this year, where it seems like the group will sort of decide whether or not they're going to take it personally. Like some of the very last, like tribal councils, people are like, you voted me off. I get it. Makes sense. And other ones are like, I cannot believe that you did this. I don't know how you sleep at night. And it seems like there's sort of like a group think amongst just like what the general vibe is in the jury. I wonder, too, if what you're saying, like, did you feel any kind of pressure when you're voted off as a woman or even just playing in the game to not appear bitchy to the audience?
Yes, definitely. And I know my second season, I truly loved John Cochran and he was my buddy for the game. So I mm-hmm. I wasn't actually bitter, but I know in my third season, I did take it pretty personal. And I really didn't like Sarah after that because I was thinking she's a sociopath. Like, how is she able to do this?
Yeah.
But she's, I don't know. You can't go around calling people sociopaths. I mean, I think honestly, she's just with her, she's a cop. So like she knows how to like form relationships and do all of that. Like it's a skill set. So I think she just used what she knew and she used it for the game and she won. So, but that's a really good point. Like I think deep down, you are really, really hurt, but you don't want to come across as super bitter or bitchy. And you're right. Sometimes the guys are applauded for the you know, quote unquote, mean speeches at the end. And sometimes the girls are called names for it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it seems like a very different game in terms of just how people are treated for their gender overall. Like, I'm so curious, like, especially for... It always bothers me when people are like, well, we want to vote off like the big tough guys because they're going to be better in the challenges. And I'm like, so many of these women are kicking all of your asses in all of these challenges, which you've done. I've been like jumping off of my couch screaming for you in so, so many challenges where you're just like kicking ass. Did any of that at the time ever bother you that like some of the women would be just like physically underestimated in any of the challenges?
I mean, I think it was almost a good thing to be underestimated, mm-hmm. though, because then people were more impressed by you. But it's weird because being good at challenges you think would be a good thing, but you actually just kind of want to be average at challenges because
right,
then
you want to fly under the radar.
Yes, because my biggest downfall is I get to the merge and then I win one of the early individual challenges and then people are always looking for any reason to get someone out that isn't them. So they'll say, Andrea just won two challenges. We have to get her out. She's going to go on a run. So in Karamoan and in Game Changers, I was targeted for being a challenge threat, which I still think is kind of laughable because I'm not an exceptional athlete. I really am just like pretty above average in most things. And I just kind of got lucky. I mean, the challenges I won, I mean, one was like stacking these domino things that anyone could have won. I don't think it was anything that.
But you were the fastest at it.
Oh my God. Also, I was watching you on this freaking like wood pole. And then another time you had like a block on your head and you're on your tippy toes. And like, I have to ask what your background is. Do you play sports? Do you dance? Like, did any of that come to you naturally, or were you just like, I'm a gamer and I'm going to fucking win this challenge?
I mean, okay, I did play sports in high school and I am athletic. So I've always pushed myself. I did high school track and basketball and volleyball. You know, grew up on a farm, so I did a lot of hard work around the farm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so okay, I am pretty... I am pretty decent. Yeah. I know. I always like to downplay it in case any other Survivor players are listening.
Oh, no.
No, but it is kind of crazy for me is I never knew I would be so good at the endurance challenges, because you never in your everyday life are balancing on a floating piece of wood in the ocean for hours. Yeah. You know, you're not
challenging. How do you practice that?
No,
you
can't practice that. No one's practicing that. And I've been able to just click into this, I don't know, insane endurance that I never thought possible. I mean, you know, especially now as an adult and like way removed from any sort of sports or anything, I can barely get myself to go out and run a mile, truthfully. I like tried it today. I like have no willpower. But on Survivor and like training for Survivor, I just become a different person. It's just, you know, it came back to haunt me. But I think my biggest takeaway from my whole Survivor career is I am so much better at the challenges than I ever thought I would be. I'm so much tougher than I thought. And I feel like a challenge beast. And I know that, you know, it's not like the best thing. But like when people call me that, I'm like, thank you. I really appreciate that, because it's not easy to like push yourself and like hold on to that wooden pole. And you're like all your inside of your legs are like bleeding. I mean,
and then you just like jumped off of it. That pole thing freaks me out every time I've seen it, of you just like starting to slide off and then like Ozzy's shit talking you, and then you just like hop off and fall what seems like 15,000 stories from the sky, and you get up and you're just like pissed that you lost. It's so inspiring. You just have like such the eye of the tiger in all of these challenges that it like always hypes me up so much. What does wait, you said training. So like, talk to us about training for Survivor. Like, you know you're going back, and then you just start doing what? Like puzzles?
Yeah. Yeah, basically. I mean, I'm such an overachiever, addictive personality kind of person. So if I have something I'm getting ready for, I will just go all in. I'm obsessed. So every time Survivor calls me, I just like, okay, here we go. So basically, I just start like really intense workouts, probably twice a day. I'm doing biking. I'm doing like all these random things I can think of that could possibly be a challenge. So I know for my first season, I was making fires out in our backyard. Oh, I was like, God. I found a bow and arrow in the barn, and I was like, well, you never know. I was like balancing on fences, swimming, because swimming is actually a weakness of mine. I mean, I'm decent, but not as good as I would like to be. So whenever Survivor calls, I'm like, okay, here we go. I got to get back swimming. So just kind of thinking of any sort of challenges that could come up, because as much as you don't want to be that standout star, you also don't want to be the liability. And if it's early on in the game and you mess up a challenge, then you could go home. I mean, the game has evolved, but people will still vote you out if you lost a challenge for them because they're pissed.
And you said earlier, there's cameras on you all the time.
Yeah, you forget about it pretty quickly. I know my first season, it was obviously weird. You show up on the beach, there's about 5 cameras on you and your whole tribe, and you don't know what you're supposed to be doing because everything feels like you're trying to act, because you're thinking about what you're saying. You're trying to be, I mean, I wasn't, but people are trying to be camera funny, and you know they're just doing that because the cameras are there. But when it's your first season, you don't know how to act on camera. And then after reality sets in, you realize, oh, if we don't figure out how to make a fire, we actually won't be able to boil water and we won't be able to eat. If we don't make a shelter, we won't be able to sleep. We're going to be rained on. And then you immediately forget about the cameras because you have so many more important things to be thinking about. By the time you play a couple seasons, you barely give the cameras a second glance. But on my third season, it was funny because I was having all these conversations with Sari in the shelter. That was kind of our go-to, is we'd have like very quiet conversations in the shelter. And I kept getting hit by the boom. I was like, what's going on here? I mean, is this guy a nuke? Is he falling asleep? And then I realized, no one ever told me, but I guess this is a known thing from Survivor players that I didn't know, is that if you're speaking too quietly, they'll actually bop you on the head. So I was getting hit for 5 days in a row before I realized what is going on. And then I learned I had to talk a little louder. Another thing that is interesting too that will mess with you is, so on strategy days, there'll be maybe like three or four cameras there. And, you know, they'll be filming you talking to somebody, and all of a sudden they'll get some radio call, and then they'll start sprinting out into the jungle. And that'll tell you, okay, there's obviously an important conversation going on. Maybe someone is finding an idol. Either way, whatever we're talking about is really boring. So you pay attention to those things.
Mm-hmm. I was always curious about that. That makes so much sense. Like whenever somebody is off, like looking for an idol and we could see it, the audience, it means that there's a camera with them. So I'm like, like, hope nobody notices I'm looking for an idol. And I'm like, don't they notice that there's a whole camera that's gone? Like, that seems so crazy.
Can you talk to us about the food? I just am so interested in the food. I think I saw you about to eat a stingray. I just need to know, like, are there times where you just straight up don't eat? Did you ever feel, like, sick from having to eat the limited amount of stuff that was available? What's happening there?
Yeah, the food situation is dire. It's truly horrible. You get there and you have a rice ration. Depends on the season, but usually it's just a little bit of rice and possibly coconuts. I think in Fiji, where they've been the last few seasons, they have coconuts. But everywhere else, like my other seasons, we didn't. So all we had was a handful of rice in the morning and a handful at night. And you're probably, I mean, you're truly probably eating 500, 600 calories. And then sometimes if you're on a tribe that is good at fishing, we had Aussie, you know, he'll catch a fish or a stingray, but then you have to split it. So you're still barely eating anything. You feel super sick. You feel very weak. And then on top of that, you have to compete in really difficult, strenuous challenges. It's horrible. And then, of course, that affects everything. It affects your body, but then also mentally you start to break down because you're barely eating. So I always tell people, because when people ask me, well, why is it so dramatic? I mean, why is everyone so... And I'm like, okay, honestly, try this out. So for 3 days, I try doing this. Have 400 calories a day, and it's just rice. And then also try to compete for $1 million with really obnoxious people. And then you're going to be very dramatic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how do you stay likable when you're that hungry? I would be like such an asshole to everybody around me.
Well,
so I would be voted off immediately.
Yeah, you stay likable to the viewers with the edit. But other than that, everyone sees you be pretty horrible at times.
How do you decide what clothes you're bringing?
So casting basically puts you in your outfit. So that's why you'll see. Yeah. And I wish more people knew that, because it's always embarrassing when I play Survivor and I'm wearing cowboy boots with a little bit of a heel. So, yeah, they want you to be a certain character. So that's why you'll see people in suits. That's the lawyer. You'll see someone like me. Someone like me in plaid and cowboy boots because I was supposed to be the farm girl. And then it was interesting because on my third season, I'd already been living in New York for 7-8 years. And I don't wear plaid or cowboy boots. But that was my outfit. And then you'll see some girls in heels. They're actually better about the wardrobe now, is they're actually letting people bring more clothes. But I remember a girl, Natalie, on my first season, she was in heels out on the island and a little skimpy dress. So, yeah, but casting chooses. Because obviously if everyone could choose what they were going to wear, they'd be putting on so many layers.
Yeah, of course. And I'm seeing, like, different, like you said, people come in suits and they have ties on. And I'm like, who is that attached to their suit that they would wear it to an island? It makes no sense.
I would just straight up head to toe SPF, like, pants and shirt and hat. Like, you've seen my SPF hat, Taylor. It is not cute. Yes. And I would fully wear it the whole time on TV.
Wait, they give you guys sunscreen too, right?
Yes. Yeah, so there's a medical box that is in the jungle, and you can go there one person at a time, and the cameras won't follow you. So in the med box, you have sunscreen, bug repellent, you have any sort of medication that you're on. There's also feminine products, and I think that's it. So any other personal items?
God, has anyone ever used, like, anyone's medications against them in the game?
I don't think so. So they, all of the labels and everything is off. So they're just in little packets.
Okay.
So, yeah, that would be really, that'd be bad.
Yeah. I'd be like, why don't you go take one of your Xanax or something? Yeah, yeah.
They'd be like, Andrea has a lot of sertraline in here.
Yeah.
Wait, speaking of also horrible, horrible things to use against someone in a game, you were at the, like, very, very shocking and heartbreaking tribal council where Varner outed a fellow contestant, Zeke. How that looks like it made you justifiably, like, so very emotional. I'm curious if at, like, that day, if anybody, probably not anybody on the crew, but did anybody, like, want cameras to stop rolling? Did that feel like a moment that went too far in the sense of filming the show?
I mean, that was just, it was just horrible. I know that Varner was, you know, he was really going crazy at camp because he knew he was going home. So he was starting to say things to everybody that he was going to blow up everyone's game. And he said something to me that is very chilling now that I think about it. But he said, Zeke isn't who you think he is. And he alluded to him, like, to good, he was going to maybe say something. But I never in a million years thought he would do what he did. I did not think, I didn't even, because at that point it goes outside of the game. So I didn't even think that was a possibility. So at Tribal Council, when he started speaking and I knew that he was going to say that, I started actually yelling. I thought I was yelling over what he was saying, but then they were able, I guess not, because in the edit you can hear what he's saying perfectly. Wow. But yeah, I just remember just knowing that this was just a huge, horrible moment that superseded the game. I mean, a lot of people have brought up the fact that CBS should have edited that out, or they should have, they could have, they could, you know, Jeff could have said, hey, we're not doing this right now. Let's just get back to Tribal and not bring it into that. So I don't know. There's some, it's just, the whole thing was really sad because that's not how Zeke wanted it to go, obviously. And he's, you know, I still, you know, I'm in contact with him. And I think he's really been doing great and is doing wonderful things in his career. So I know he's a stronger person because of it. Because what choice does he have? It wasn't, you know, it wasn't Varner's story to tell. That was just, it was horrible, just horrible.
Yeah, it seemed so unpleasant, and I feel like my first time watching it, it was at least cathartic for me to have you there being so pissed about it and telling him how wrong it was, because then it felt like everybody needed to do, and you weren't the only one, thank God. So, but it was just one of the most surreal moments in terms of, like, no, this is, we all care so much about this game, but you just crossed every line that you could, and the line is so far, and yet you still crossed it. It just seems so,
it's also like a bigger conversation. His whole point was that, you know, people are lying to you, and that's a fundamental misunderstanding of what it's like to exist as a trans person. You know, you're not lying about how you present yourself. I just think that that's such a
being dishonest.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that he would think of it that way.
It was also just such a dumb, I mean, besides it being absolutely wrong of him to do. It was also just a dumb move because what do you think? Do you think we're going to say, oh, well, in that case, Zeke, you're going home. I mean, like what?
In what world?
Yeah. We would be like, I mean, of course we were like heartbroken that this happened. But like, in what world would we have said, oh, okay, you're right. You're going to stay, Werner. I mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah. It is. It totally is. I mean, also, what is... Okay, I guess these are like two sort of questions, but we've talked a little bit about the edit. When you go back and you are watching, do you feel like, at least for like your personal journey, that things are kind of told as they went down, or it's a little amplified to be a little bit more dramatic? And my follow-up is Jeff as like sassy and on point as he seems to be on the show?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jeff is so intimidating. And I've interacted with Jeff more than the average Survivor player because I've interviewed him for People. I went out to Fiji after my third season and I interviewed that cast and I interviewed Jeff out in Fiji. And I have to tell you, I am always shaking in my boots when I have to interview Jeff. Because he knows what he wants. And it seems like he doesn't have any time for incompetence. So that's the way he is at Tribal Council. Sometimes if he's not getting what he wants, he will stop it down and he'll say, you have to give me something or I'll never ask you a question again at Tribal Council. So it's this weird thing where you have to somehow divulge information without scaring your alliance. And you don't want to say too much, but you have to say something so Jeff will be happy. But you don't want to say too much so your alliance turns on you and doubts you. It's a weird balance. Tribal Councils, I'm not a fan.
This is like being in a writer's room to me, honestly. People will be like, I want to talk shit with you, and if you don't talk shit, then I'm not going to trust you. But you can't talk so much shit that you ruin your whole reputation with everybody else.
Exactly.
Like, so similar. So I would be great on Survivor, except for the eating part. That's all.
Yeah, Alyssa, you would really kick butt. I think
no,
that you
I wouldn't.
Be really
I would be so bitter. I take everything so personally. I'm very uncomfortable all the time when it's like a little hot or a little cold. I cannot make a fire. There's absolutely no way. So
you'd probably be great TV though, because would be entertaining.
Yeah. But wait, you also, this, I can't believe I waited this long to bring it up because I think I love, first of all, this is like my favorite word. You had a showmance in your first season. Was like, did that feel amped up at all in the edit? Like very much what kind of the show wanted to see? Or was everything we were seeing like pretty genuine in how it went down?
No, so amped up. The thing is about that, so I actually had two showmances because they also played this little showmancy thing with Eddie on my second season. And neither of them were actual, well, I mean, I'm a flirt. I've always been a flirt. But the thing about the first showmance with Matt is that I actually had a boyfriend on that season. So I wasn't really flirting with Matt. That's just my, I don't know. I've always had this very flirty personality. And when they cast me on the show, casting made it clear they wanted me to be single. So I think I kind of knew, all right, they might be trying to play this up. So I was just talking with Matt. And yes, I did think he was very, very cute because he's a very attractive person. But there's no, you know, that was the extent. I mean, we were kind of flirty. We talked. We wanted to work together. And then he was voted out. So there wasn't really anything more to it. We never dated. It was nothing like that. And then, of course, I was just really worried about it because I came back to my boyfriend. Yeah. And I was like, I mean, they might have like maybe made it seem like something happened. And but yeah, nothing actually happened with that. It's really easy, though, for the editors to make something out of just a little bit. All they have to do when they're asking you questions is say, okay, Andrea, so how do you feel about Matt? And then you'll say, well, I don't know. I mean, I have a boyfriend, but we get along. And they'll say, oh, no, but like, I mean, he's cute, right? Then you'll say, oh, Matt's so cute. And then they show Matt's so cute. Then they show you talking. Yeah. And then they put on like some butterflies and some music. And then there you go, a showmance. And then they show other people talking about you flirting. So all they need is one soundbite from you, from him, from the other players, and bam, it's a whole love story.
But it sounds like you have to be, like, less worried about that whole part of your experience when you're actually on the island and playing the game, right? And it seems like after you leave is when you're like, ooh, I probably got to talk to my boyfriend about this. It seems like there's just so many things to think about that I feel like being interviewed and being like, yeah, Matt's cute, is, like, probably the least of your worries, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because as soon as the season wraps, that's, at least for me, that's when I start to think about everything I said and every way they could spin the edit. It actually gives me a lot of anxiety. I'm not usually an anxious person, but with Survivor, every time it airs, I have almost debilitating anxiety because I'm just thinking they're going to show that, they're going to show that. And in Game Changers, I had the worst because the horrible thing happened with the tribal council with Zeke. And then the next episode, he turned on me and that was a shock to me. And so then I vote him out. And the whole time I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to be the biggest villain because I voted out the person and I actually was like going after him. And luckily the editing, they showed what had happened. But it just depends. I mean, the editors have all the power. They can just decide who they want to be the villain in that episode. I got so lucky. I got really lucky.
Well, it seems like even on, I mean, there's seasons where they're literally like heroes versus villains. And like they'll arrive at the island and Jeff will be like, you guys are the villains. And of those people, a lot of them are like surprised. They're like, me? And it's like, it's so clear when you see that there is, like you're talking about, there's so much in the edit of what the show has decided who's sort of going to be the bad guy. I feel like other people really lean into it and are like, yeah, I play a down and dirty game and that's the way it is. But
yeah,
it's like a fine line between who could be, everybody's just being strategic. And so it's sort of in the hands of the editors of who's going to be the villain.
Well, yeah, and I should clarify, there's nothing wrong with being a villain because they're probably more fun to watch. I think I just will have anxiety about saying something that I didn't mean it a certain way and then it comes across as just so nasty, mean, I don't know, you know, any sort of thing that could make me canceled. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just anything. Of course. Because in the heat of the moment, you just say stuff. And again, you are starving. You are losing your mind. And they have really talented producers that can get you to say basically anything.
Do you feel like you got better at editing yourself or like knowing how your sound bites were going to be used? Or is it just totally out of your hands and you just have to think about the strategy that's in front of you?
I feel like because I work in TV as well, it actually was worse because I kept thinking about the episodes and how they were going to be edited out on the island. So I was very aware of the cameras. Oh, no, Malcolm went home. This is going to be a bad season. Like, I was so in my head about the final product instead of just living in the game. So I don't know. That probably was not the best. But you do get used to, you know how to look for cues with the producers, because sometimes they'll drop little hints. And the first season you play, you'll probably miss all these hints. But when you play more, you start to listen to their questions and they'll say something like, well, when you get votes tonight, what's your reaction going to be? And then you think, wait, I'm getting votes tonight? Oh, I'm getting votes tonight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, intentional or not, probably unintentional, the producers will mess up and give you a little hint.
Wow. Does this change the way – do you watch any other reality TV?
Recently got very into Summer House. I couldn't get enough. I do watch a bit of reality TV here and there. I mean, I've watched tons of seasons of The Bachelor. I haven't watched this season yet, but – yeah, like The Bachelor. What else?
Does that affect the way you watch The Bachelor in terms of like their kind of talking head interviews? I imagine are conducted in sort of a similar way. So are you watching those interviews with like a, okay, I know that this is a very leading experience?
Yes, for sure. I think a big thing for me is I don't hate anybody. And I think because I because, which is not very exciting for if I was ever doing a reality podcast like you two, it wouldn't be very exciting because I'm so nice about everyone. And I'm saying, well, you know, they're in this house. They don't have their phone. The producers are asking them questions. Like, I make excuses for everybody just because I know how that, you know, with the editing, you can make the nicest person look horrible or, you know, vice versa. So, yeah.
So you don't hate anyone on Summer House? Andrea?
I don't.
No, are you serious?
Okay, because even the unbearable people, for most people, those are the people I love watching. It's like the Philip thing. I love watching other people freak out over someone else that they can't stand. So I think that's my enjoyment. So no, I don't even, I kind of like Hannah. No.
I will say that, especially on Bravo, every season there's a different quote-unquote villain, and that's what keeps it interesting. And there's different alliances and different friendships. And in The Bachelor, it's more like it's set. There's one villain, and you know who it is. There's like a fake villain and then the real villain towards the end. And to me, that's less interesting. It's a little more repetitive. So I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think, too, look, I think villains are very fun. There's a big difference between a villain and then an awful person who's racist, sexist, any of that. Like, those people I actually don't like. So anyone that's racist, sexist, homophobic, obviously, those are people I do not like. Ooh, just hit something. I do not like those people. But villains that aren't really that problematic, I don't know. I think they're enjoyable.
I agree with
you. Yeah, there's some of we're grateful to so many of them for giving us amazing TV. Like, Willis and I both sing the praises of a lot of, like, quote-unquote villains, especially in, like, the Housewives franchises, because they're the people who are, like, helping give us a story and, like, dredging up other people's sort of dirty laundry. And it's necessary to, like, the engine of the show. And that is, like, fun and entertainment and different than, anybody being any kind of ist that we actually hate,
yeah.
Which makes sense. Any last questions, Alyssa, or should we get into what Andrea's got going on?
Let's get into what Andrea's got going on.
Yeah, where can people, I feel like, first of all, also, I am very in awe of everything that you're doing in terms of hosting, because I've only recently started to do, like, sort of red carpet interview things, and I find them, like, so scary, and they could be very intimidating to me. And all of it seems to come, like, so naturally to you. Did you find, like, you really liked being in front of camera? Like, did Survivor lead you into, like, sort of the broadcasting hosting world? Or were you already trying to do that before?
Well, I went to school for theater, and I was doing more acting, and then Survivor came along while I was still in school. And then after doing Survivor and being in New York, I ended up just somehow stumbling into hosting, and I found out I like it better and I'm better at it. So I kind of quickly learned, like, acting, I don't think I get it. You know, like, I went to school for it. I was definitely pursuing it. And I would always leave an audition or leave a job and think, was that even good? I have no idea. I think I was believable, but I don't even know. And I think I just never had the confidence. But then hosting, right away, I'm pretty much self-taught with hosting. But right away, I started working, and I was just getting so much I was just getting better feedback. I felt confident, and I just liked it because I knew I was good at it. So
I'm very good at it.
Thank you. Really, I mean,
like,
it's
I've, like, watched so much of it, and I'm like, oh my God, she's so good. And I have, like, such an even, like I said, more appreciation of it, because I think it could be really challenging. And I think that you're very talented at it.
Well,
so
thank you.
It's great that you found it. Tell our listeners where they could find you online.
Yes, I feel like I could talk to you both for days. You can find me. So yeah, I host People in 10. It's every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern. That's on People's Instagram and also their Twitter and their Facebook. And I host a couple other things that will be coming out soon. So you can just follow me on Instagram, and I usually post everything on there. So at Andrea Behlke, it's BOEHLKE.
Amazing. Thank you so, so, so much for doing this. I am just, like, so in awe of having you on this in the first place.
Well, thank you for having me. If you ever want me to come back and recap a show or something, I'm so down.
Yeah, we're going to maybe next season of Summer House.
Oh, like, okay.
And are you going to be watching Winter House?
Oh, I probably will. Yeah, I have to be honest, though. I am bummed that Hannah's not going to be back.
Wow. Yeah, see, we're going to have to do a whole episode on that.